when we are determined to do good for the sake of all others, a small deed can indeed be worth great merits. But when we only think of benefiting ourselves, then even if we do many good deeds, the merits will be small. However, herein lies the difference between big and small goodness. It is determined by our intentions, by whether we are thinking of all others or thinking only of ourselves and of our family. We need to understand this when we dedicate merits after reciting sutras or chanting a Buddha's name. Usually, we dedicate merits to a particular person, wishing that the Buddha would help him or her in gaining various benefits. This is what is called a small goodness. The benefits gained would be small as well. In fact, we cannot even be sure that the person being dedicated to would actually gain any benefit at all. Therefore, in cases like this, when one or more of our family members is in crisis, we should recite sutras or chant the Buddha's name and then dedicate the merits to all beings throughout the universe. We should wish that all living beings would no longer undergo illness or suffering, and that they would all be happy and healthy. When we are sincere in this thought, our family members will gain as well. Why? Because our heart is truly all-encompassing. We can see an example of this in Earth Treasure Sutra, where the Brahmin girl called Bright Eyes made a vow on behalf of her mother. People often say, "I have dedicated all my merits to others and have gained nothing for myself. What is the use in practicing goodness?" This could only come from a narrow mind. If we prostrate in front of the Buddha, but do not feel any response, it is because our hearts are selfish. We are totally self-seeking and do not know that we should magnify our merits so that they encompass the entire universe. When we dedicate the merits to all living beings, it is like passing on a light. We use our flame to light those of others, so that the whole world is alight with brightness. This results in great benefits with no loss to ourselves. This is why people who practice Buddhism need to dedicate their merits from their practice to reality, awakening, and all beings, animate and inanimate, in order to uncover the perfect, complete Buddha nature. The heart and roots of Chinese culture lies in two things, namely ancestral memorial halls and the classical Chinese language. The reason China became a country with so much cultural history is due to the strong foundation of human relationships. Classical Chinese must be preserved, because if we cease its use, then the Chinese would suffer overwhelming adversities and the race would never be restored. Also, we need to preserve the Mahayana teachings. As long as we can preserve these three things, then not only will China have a bright future, but the world and the universe will also benefit. From the book, what is difficult goodness and easy goodness? Knowledgeable scholars of the past said, when one wishes to conquer greed and desires, one should start with what is most difficult to overcome. When Confucius talked about how to cultivate our humanity, he also said to start with what is most difficult to practice. End quote. This section cites the teachings of ancient sages and virtuous people, which tell us that we possess innumerable afflicting habits and desires. Therefore, they taught us to start with what is most serious. If we can overcome our most serious faults, then we can overcome other matters which will appear trivial in comparison. When we want to eliminate the bad and practice all that is good, we must know where to begin. This is also why, when Confucius was teaching about the cultivation of humanity, he believed that we should start with what is most difficult to practice. From the book. For example, the old teacher, Mr. Xu of Jiangxi, gave 2 years' salary to a poor family who owed money to the government. Thus, he saved them from being torn apart if the husband was sent to prison. End quote. This is a very good example, because Mr. Xu did something which was difficult to do and gave up something which was difficult to give up. During ancient times in China, students used to give their teachers a small gift during holidays. Originally, it was strips of dried meat, which were tied into a bundle. Later, the strips of dried meat became acknowledged as a student's gift to the teacher, although they may not necessarily have been dried meat. Classes were held at private home schools, and the number of students varied. 20 to 30 students would be considered a good number. The smaller schools might have only had a dozen or so students. Therefore, the gifts or pay that the teacher would receive were often meager. For Mr. Xu to donate 2 years' salary to help the couple pay off their debt was a considerable undertaking. From the book. Another example is Mr. Zhang from Handan. Mr. Zhang gave his 10 years of savings to a poor man so he could repay a debt. This saved him from going to jail and enabled him to remain with his wife. Such examples as Mr. Xu and Mr. Zhang are rare, for they gave what is most difficult to give. What others could not sacrifice, they did so willingly. End quote. Mr. Xu gave away 2 years of salary. Mr. Zhang gave away 10 years of savings. In both cases, they were given to pay back money that was owed to the government. Usually, an offense of not being able to pay back public funds would entail a jail sentence for the offender. By paying back the funds, the family was saved from being torn apart. We depend on money and materials to survive. Therefore, to be able to give away money is extremely difficult to do, especially when it is all the savings that we have. This is to conquer what is most difficult to conquer, to start what is most difficult to practice. It is also a good practice for learning to curb our desires. From the book. Another example is Mr. Jin from Jiangsu province. As he was old and did not have any sons, his neighbor offered their young daughter in marriage to him to give him descendants to carry on his name. Mr. Jin refused the offer and sent her back home. This is another example of being able to overcome what is most difficult to conquer in oneself. End quote. Mr. Jin had no sons. During ancient times, it was an acceptable custom for him to take a second wife, to bear an heir, to carry on the family name. To have an heir was important, very important. A neighbor wanted to give their very young daughter in marriage to Mr. Jin. However, he recognized the large age difference, and although he really wanted a son, he felt he could not ruin a young girl's future just to serve his own purpose. This is a good example of restraining our own desires even when it is most difficult to do so. From the book. Therefore, the heavens showered down good fortune, which was especially good for these three men. It is easier for those who have money and power to accumulate merits and virtues than for those who are poor. However, if we refuse to cultivate kindness even when it is easy and we have the chance to do so, then it would truly be a shame. For those who are poor and without prestige, doing kind things for others is very difficult. However, if even in this difficulty we can still manage to help others, then it would be even more valuable. End quote. These are the differences between difficult goodness and easy goodness. Upon understanding this logic, we should learn to grasp any opportunities to practice goodness and accumulate merit. Once we lose an opportunity, we may not get another when we really want to practice. Wealth does not last forever. Our luck changes every 5 years. During our lifetime, there will be the best 5 years and the worst 5 years. If the good years are during our old age, then this will be true good fortune. On the other hand, if the worst 5 years occur during our old age, then this will be even more difficult because the hardships that we suffer then will be in addition to our being weak and having more difficulties. Because physically, we are already at a disadvantage. Therefore, we should learn to practice goodness at an early age, to let everyone share in our good fortune. Because once we give it away, we will still gain whatever we are destined to gain. When we are young and strong, we would do well to not exhaust all of our good fortune. If we do not use it up, then it will be kept intact for us to enjoy later in life. Similarly, if we suffer hardships first, then there will be none left for us to endure when we become older. This is why we must learn to cultivate and accumulate good fortune for us to enjoy during our old age. It is most important that as Buddhists, we know exactly why we are practicing. We do so to accumulate the good fortune, the ultimate good fortune, for when we die. What is ultimate good fortune? That of no illness, of knowing that when our time is up, we can leave this world in a sitting or standing position, and that we know exactly where we are going. This is the greatest good fortune. It is up to those who practice Buddhism to help others who are willing to learn, so that we can all share this same great good fortune. It is easier to help others when we have wealth and prestige, and therefore it is easier for us to accumulate merits. However, when we have prestige and status, we must remember not to use them against others. Instead, we should use them to our advantage to perform more good deeds and to help others. If we have the means to do so, but choose not to, then we have wasted an opportunity. On the other hand, when we are poor and do not have the means, but still choose to help others, then the difficulty of the task makes the act even more valuable. From the book, There are many ways to help others whenever the opportunity presents itself. These can be simplified into 10 important categories. The first is supporting the practice of kindness. Second is revealing love and respect. Third, it's helping others to succeed in doing good. Fourth, is persuading others to practice kindness. Fifth, is helping those in desperate need. Sixth, is developing public projects for the greater benefit of people. Seventh, is practicing merits by giving wealth. Eighth, is protecting and maintaining the proper teachings. Ninth, is respecting elders. And tenth, is loving and cherishing all living things. End quote. This is what is often referred to as being joyful over others' meritorious deeds. We do our best to help everyone at every possible opportunity. Because there are so many different kinds of virtuous conduct that can be accomplished when the right opportunity arises, they have been summarized into these 10 main categories. They are truly beneficial to everyone, and we would do well to do all that we can to achieve them. From the book, what does supporting the practice of kindness mean? During the Yu Dynasty, there was an emperor by the name of Shun. One day, before he became emperor, Shun was watching some fishermen on Lake Leitze. He noticed that all the younger and stronger fishermen took the spots where the water was deep and the fish were abundant, while those who were older and weaker were left with the rapids and the shallow water, where there were very few fish. When Shun saw the situation, he empathized with the older fishermen, so he decided to join the group. Whenever he saw fishermen grab the best spots, he would not speak of their faults. But when he saw those who were humble and yielding, he praised them everywhere he went, and even followed their humble and polite ways. Shun stayed and fished like this for a whole year, until the other fishermen got into the habit of yielding good spots to others. A wise and intelligent man such as Shun could have easily influenced others with just a few words. Why did he not just say something instead of changing others by setting a good example? Shun's painstaking and good intentions were like the expert craftsmanship that comes only as the result of long practice and hard work. End quote. Mr. Liao Fan used an example here to teach us how to interact with people and how to lead and encourage others to practice kindness. During ancient times, fishing was an important part of daily life. The older fishermen were left with the rapids and shallow water where there were very few fish, because the best spots were taken by those who were younger and stronger. Feeling saddened by the situation, Shun thought of an inventive way to remedy it. He was wise, patient, and clever. So he joined the fishermen in catching fish. His true intention was to try to reform the younger fishermen. When he saw people competing for a spot, he would say nothing. However, when one of them yielded to another, he praised them highly. He used the method of concealing faults and praising goodness. After persisting in this way for an entire year, the young fishermen were all reformed by Shun, and they had ceased fighting over the fishing spots as they yielded to others. In our society today, much effort has been spent in highlighting bad deeds. As soon as anyone acts contrary to customs, behaves immorally, or breaks the law, the media greatly publicizes it. When this is done, there is bound to be more good than bad people. When no one recognizes good deeds, there is little motivation to do good deeds. In fact, it is more encouraging to practice wrongdoings. We should follow the examples set by ancient sages and virtuous people. They did not speak of the faults of others, but waited for these people to reflect upon themselves until they had awakened. This is the proper way to teach people. Everyone has a conscience. Sometimes it can be overwhelmed by the desires for wealth and prestige. As long as we use the expedient way to help others to see the truth, they will eventually come around. This was what Emperor Shun did with the fishermen. He did not want to use words to influence others, preferring to set an example for them through his own actions. Although it took longer, the effects would last longer, because words are never as effective as actual actions. From this, we can appreciate Shun's wisdom. From the book. In today's era of low morality, social breakdown, and loss of proper thinking, it is most difficult to find a good standard of behavior. Therefore, when those around us have shortcomings, we do not use our good points to highlight their deficiencies. When others are unkind, we do not point out our kindness and compare ourselves to them. When others are not as capable as we are, we do not purposely surpass them with our abilities. Even when we are intelligent and competent, these skills are to be kept hidden and not boasted of. Instead, we need to behave even more modestly than ever. When others make mistakes, we tolerate and conceal them, providing the opportunity to reform without the loss of self-respect. End quote. We need to painstakingly refrain from these acts. Just because we have certain good points or advantages that others lack, it does not mean that we can gloat. Instead, we must learn to conceal our abilities and to accommodate the faults of others. Remembering this and not flaunting our own skills and intelligence is true broad-mindedness and tolerance. If we need to show off every time we can do something, then we will accomplish little. If we were truly capable of great achievements, we would not be as superficial as most people are. We would have more depth. By being tolerant, not speaking of the faults of others, but praising the goodness of others, we will truly be abiding by the precepts and cultivating good fortune. From the book. When we allow others to keep their dignity, they will be even more careful of future actions. When we see strengths or even small kindnesses in others, we can learn from them and praise them to others. End quote. If we can set an example with our own behavior to the extent that others learn moderation, then we will have done very well. When we see the slightest goodness displayed by others, we should be happy about it and praise it to others. When my teacher, Venerable Master Jing Kong, first met his late teacher, Mr. Bingnan Li, he taught teacher not to talk about the faults of others, and better still, to hide them. Teacher understood that. Mr. Li told him also not to praise others. That confused teacher. He realized that discussing the faults of others was not good. But on the other hand, praising others should be fine, so why should he not do so? Mr. Li later explained, when you praise someone, the harm you have caused is even greater than when you scold him for his faults. How could that be? Mr. Li continued, it takes great wisdom to know how to praise others. Thoughtless praise can cause a person great harm. If others display a little bit of ability and we praise them excessively, then they may become so proud of the fact that they would think they were wonderful. Thinking in this manner prevents them from further improvement. When we do not progress, we regress. Now, haven't you done more harm than good? After thinking about this, teacher appreciated the logic in what he had said. So, what sort of a person should we praise? In Buddhism, we praise those who are unaffected by the 8 emotions of others. The emotions of gain, loss, fame, disgrace, praise, blame, pleasure, pain. We can praise these people because they will not be harmed, but will remain unmoved. In fact, the more we praise these people, the more modest they become, and the more they will try to improve. We can give special praise to these people. Therefore, we should be extra careful with our praise, not inadvertently allowing our good intentions to lead to bad deeds. So from this passage, we can see how much care Emperor Shun used in taking an entire year trying to help the young fishermen correct their faults. From the text. In daily life, we can refrain from speaking and acting with selfish intentions, but instead seek to benefit society. We can set standards for others to follow. These are the qualities of a great person who thinks of the public welfare as more important than his or her own. End quote. When we set standards for others to follow, we should set a standard, an example, with our own behavior. What are the qualities of a great person that Mr. Liao Fan is talking about? It is someone who disregards personal welfare and thinks only in terms of benefiting others, as opposed to the selfish person who thinks only of benefiting the self. For example, bodhisattvas would be considered great persons. In the 8 Great Person Enlightenment Sutra, the term great persons refers to bodhisattvas and the 8 kinds of enlightenment. It discusses the path and the deeds of bodhisattvas. From the book. What is meant by revering love and respect for others? Sometimes it is hard to tell from appearance whether one is an honorable person or a fraud, since frauds usually pretend to be honorable. Mencius said that the difference between truly honorable people and ordinary people lies in their intentions. The difference between them is like black and white. End quote. Confucianism talks about honorable persons, sages, and virtuous people. In Buddhism, there are innumerable Buddhas and Bodhisattvas. What differentiates them from ordinary people is intention. It is extremely difficult to distinguish by appearance alone. And this is why we have often misunderstood virtuous people. For example, in the past, there were three monks from Tiantai Mountain in Zhejiang Province named Hanshan, Shuda, and Fangan. This account is recorded in the diary of Tiantai Mountain. At the time, everyone viewed the three monks as suffering from mental disorders because their behavior was so unusual. Nobody would associate with them. This shows how appearances can be very deceiving. Fangan's job was to pound the rice in order to remove the husks, which was what Master Huineng did when he was in Huangmei. Fangan was actually the transformation body of Buddha Amitabha, who husked the rice to feed everyone. Hanshan and Shuda were the transformation bodies of great wisdom bodhisattva and universal worthy bodhisattva. They worked in the kitchen too, lighting fires for the stove and performing other miscellaneous duties. They went shoeless, dressed raggedly, and acted absurdly. No one felt they were worthy of anything. It is true that by judging by appearances only, it is difficult for most of us to differentiate those who are truly virtuous people. Fangan was the one who revealed that they were actually transformations of three virtuous people. At that time, there was a local magistrate, Magistrate Liu, whose mother fell ill while they were traveling to his new post where he was supposed to report. Mr. Liu became very anxious after several doctors had failed to help his mother. When Fangan was passing through the neighborhood, he sought out Mr. Liu and said, "Someone in your household is ill. I am able to help this person." Afterward, the magistrate naturally felt immense gratitude. Seeing that Fangan was a monk, he inquired about his way place. Fangan replied, "I live in Tiantai Mountain." Mr. Liu asked, "Are there any sages or virtuous people residing in your way place?" Fangan answered very honestly, "Great wisdom bodhisattva and universal worthy bodhisattva live there." Mr. Liu asked, "How will I be able to recognize and learn from them?" Fangan honestly replied, "One is named Hanshan, and the other is named Shuda." A few days later, Magistrate Liu reported in to his office after he went to Tiantai Mountain, and he went to pay his respects to the two great bodhisattvas. When he got there, he found them in the kitchen, doing chores and acting strangely. He immediately knelt down and paid his respects to them. The monks
seemingly ignored him, then turned on their heels and ran out of the kitchen. Magistrate Liu ordered his attendants to follow and see where they were going. The two monks ran to the base of a mountain, which then opened up. They quickly ran inside, and as the mountain was closing up again, one was heard to say to the other, "Buddha Amitabha talks too much." Magistrate Liu then realized that Feng Gan was the transformation body of Buddha Amitabha. So there were actually three great virtuous people. Twice a month, the Wei place held a very important Buddhist ceremony to recite the precepts. Han Shan and Shi De often made fun of the other monks and were therefore disliked by everyone. When the others realized that these two monks were actually the transformation bodies of great bodhisattvas, they were deeply ashamed that every day these great sages had served them their food. This shows how the intentions